Can I just say again what a joy it is to be with you in church this morning to worship God together? What a privilege it is for us as God's people with so much to celebrate at the harvest as we were reminded. And I would just thank again all those who have taken part and who have made this a very special service thus far. And again, I'd like to thank Alistair for his welcome. It's a joy to be here. I just had one reservation about coming. When I looked at the television last night, I saw the Premier League, and I saw Spurs were third. And I thought, good grief, for the first time in 30 years, Spurs are third in the first division, and I'm going to have lunch with McNeely. Not now, yeah. Well, at least your wife will have the grace to continue that offer. But as I say, it's a joy to be with you. And it's a joy also to be here this morning, because Alistair has asked me to speak to you about Tear Fund this morning as we meet together. And my first word this morning must be a word of thank you to you for your support for Tear Fund. You as a church support Tear Fund. Many of you individually support Tear Fund. And I know that the United Appeal is the single biggest donation that Tear Fund gets in Northern Ireland, in Ireland. Tear Fund started way back in 1968. Tear Fund was 40 years last year. And those of you of my vintage and older will remember that for the first time we saw on our TV screens the problem of Biafra. And all those children in Biafra who were wasting away through lack of food. And George Hoffman started Tear Fund. And he had a budget of £34,000 way back then. But today, Tear Fund works in 60 different countries with 300 different partners. And the work has developed greatly. Last year's budget was £63 million, as you can see, and 83% of that comes directly from churches in the UK and Ireland. And in Ireland, we provide 10% of it. So what you do for Tear Fund is invaluable, because the 10-year vision of Tear Fund is to see 50 million people...
I have to teach you these things, John.
That's right, Alistair's the tech. And I'll let you into a secret. The PowerPoint I was about to use corrupted this morning, Anyway, I'll know not to do that again. Thanks very much indeed. Tear Fund's vision is to see 50 million people released from spiritual and material poverty. Material and spiritual poverty through a worldwide network of 100,000 churches. And that is a tall order, and it's only with the support of people like yourselves that can be done. And I would point out that Tear Fund, 92 pence in the pound, 90 to 92 pence in the pound that you give goes to the work. Tear Fund's administration is between 8 and 10%. Maximum. And to put that in context, the next best is 22%, and the next best is 33%. And that's largely because Tear Fund has so many willing volunteers to help. So the campaign this autumn, and many of you will have seen in the leaflets already given out, Make Life Flow is the campaign for this autumn. And you've seen Stydia, and I'll talk about her shortly. But isn't this hard to believe? 900 million people lack access to clean water in the world today. 900 million people. Now, that's easy for you to conceive in Rich Hill. 900 million. That's Alistair's bank balance. But seriously, I was trying to work out how we could convey 900 million. There are 304 million people in America, in the United States. So for every person living in the United States of America, in all those great cities, there are three people who do not have access to clean water. And 2.5 billion lack basic sanitation. 2.5 billion people don't have decent sanitation in the world today. As we speak, it is quite incredible. And three children die every minute because of lack of clean water. And as we have much to celebrate and to thank God for on our harvest today, we also need to be very mindful, as you are, of those who have great need. So here is Stydia. She is the child highlighted in the latest Tearfund DVD. I mentioned her in the children's address. And she has walked all those many thousand miles from her village to get water. Can you imagine how it would affect your life today if you had to spend 4 to 5 hours going to get water and coming back? Think of how exhausted you would be as far as working is concerned. Thinking of if you were at school, how that would affect your schooling, how it would affect your health. It would affect you in so many different ways. And what I would like to do this morning is to tell you, Stydia is in Uganda, and I would like to tell you this morning about the project in Uganda that Margaret and I visited last year, of which Stydia is a part. Uganda, you can see on the screen if you can. Sudan is the big blue one in East Africa. And below it is Uganda. And the capital of Uganda is Kampala. Uganda is a landlocked country. Sudan to the north, Kenya to the east, the Congo in the west, and Rwanda to the southwest. It is 3 times the size of Ireland, Uganda, but it has a population of 30 million. So it is a considerably larger population than Ireland. And as I say, the capital is Kampala. There's been a great deal of British influence for good in Uganda. The British East African Company was founded in 1888 and was a major influence up to the early 60s before independence. But then a lot of the good work was wrecked by Idi Amin. Idi Amin was the president of Uganda from 71 to 79. And during his tenure of that office, 300,000 people were massacred, including the Archbishop of Uganda, for his faith. Uganda, in many ways, is a beautiful country, but it's also a poverty-stricken country. You can see from this slide that it's hilly and has lots of water. They say that this part of Uganda that we visited was the Switzerland of Africa. And at the bottom of the valleys, the crops were being grown. Not a plenty, but there were some. And here's another picture illustrating just the beauty of the country. But Kampala itself, of course, is a very poverty-stricken place. You can see the old tin roofs there. And again, the rough road that whenever that's wet and mucky, total mess. The people are living in absolute poverty. And do you see where that woman's getting her water? And again, there's one of the better looking shops in the area that we drove past. But interestingly, in the middle of this poverty stricken shanty town is the church. And here is an effective ministry being carried on by one of Tearfund's partners, another one of Tearfund's partners, Asset. And they do a tremendous work with AIDS victims from this little church here that is a beacon of hope for so many in such a poverty-stricken area. But we visited the Diocese of Kigezi Water and Sanitation Project, and Stydia, whom I mentioned, is one of the beneficiaries of that project. And here is the project: water is life, Jesus is everlasting life. And the whole thrust of the Kigezi Diocese Water and Sanitation Project was to bring water to people, but also the good news of the gospel. And as I say, all their vehicles have this logo on them. And this was, I just want to introduce you to the team, because these six people, the management team, and they managed a team of 42 staff, were terrific. Grace on the left, Milton, Kenneth, Reuben, who's an Anglican minister and who is one of the most godly people I've ever met. He's in charge of the whole project, and Philip. And he said to me, all our team are committed Christians because we do not simply deliver services. We attach Christian values to our work, so we are mindful of the kind of people who work for us. In holistic ministry, Jesus is central. Whatever we do in the communities, we always tell them this. So in this Diocese of Kigezi, Tearfund's partner has been working since 1986. It's one of the longest running projects with Tearfund. Kigezi itself is a very hilly place. It has two rainy seasons in the year, so there's no shortage of water. It's just a matter of harvesting it. And the aim is to ensure, their aim is to ensure that all families will have water within 500 yards of their home. They've achieved this with 65% of the population, and they're working on the rest of it. They provide the water four basic ways. For homes, they provide a water jar that holds 420 litres, and it costs £40 to provide one water jar like this. And then for bigger institutions like churches and schools, they provide a 4,000-litre tank, and that costs £200 to provide. And in this tank here, they were all chuffed because they made a major, major development. Can you see the line running down the center? That's not a crack. That's a plastic, bit of plastic pipe that they have put in as a gauge. And they were all chuffed that they could read the gauge from outside and didn't have to look inside. Now, this is the 21st century in Uganda, but they were all chuffed with that development. Then there were protected springs. Whereas the springs came down from the mountains, they had engineers who controlled the flow of the water and had it coming out constantly in places like this so that the community could use it. The community took tremendous pride. Here, Grace is showing us the source of the spring. And then you can see surrounding it, the community have put in the hedge to keep out the wild animal and to keep the place neat and tidy. The community takes great responsibility for this provision. It values it so much. It values its water supply so much. And the accountability of these people is quite incredible. When we were there, we represented Tearfund to them, the supplier, of course, and they were very keen for us to see that we appreciated what they did and that they appreciated what was done for them, and they valued it. And this here is an oil jotter. I can't describe it any other way. Of the type when you used ink on it years ago, blotted. You know what I mean? Yes, some of you had those jotters years ago. And they kept a record of attendance at their meetings. And if a family didn't attend for three meetings, it wasn't represented, they were fined for not attending. They also took so many shillings per week from these people for the maintenance of the pump. But if there was money left over, then they used it as a little bank to provide people with the funds maybe to start a little plot and so on and farming so that they could help themselves. But the clear thing was, and the clear thing that I want to get across to you this morning is that the so little money in our money transforms their lives and they deeply appreciate it. And here's another way. They provided water taps. And I've just shown this to let you see the taps sticking out. But also the way in which they had flowers around it and so on to decorate it as their little water tap that they're so proud of. How do communities get involved with this project? Well, they have to apply to the Kigezi Water and Sanitation Program. And they have to show that they can sustain the program after the team that I showed you leaves. And we were taken to a community mapping exercise. Now, this was a fascinating experience because the Kigezi Water Sanitation Team had agreed to provide them with a scheme of 50 pumps. So that we arrived to see the planning where these pumps would go, 50 taps, sorry. And we arrived to see them decide where these 50 taps would go. This was just last year. So here they've bricked out in the center of the community, the various villages. The community is made up of so many villages. So here are all the villagers meeting. And there's each village is named within it. And they used different things to mark various places. For example, the leek represented shops, a shop. The ivy represented a stream. And they used petals to represent their houses. So what they did was they said to the folk, right now, all the big institutions, the schools and the churches, we will give you a large tank for that, so that can serve so many families. And as they did that, they took out a pebble out of the bag, and then there were so many left, maybe 24, 25. And here, and I would love to have had a video of this to let you see, here the people are now discussing where those remaining taps are going to go. And I thought, boy, this is going to be good crack. If this was in Northern Ireland, can you just imagine? The Ulster Says No mentality kicking in straight away. And anyway, I thought this, and it was in a different language. It wasn't in English. And the gaggle was something else. And should I say, meanwhile, over to the right, all the children had arrived out from school. Suddenly to see these white people. And they were totally amazed by this. So if you can imagine, over to the right, my wife and one other person getting about 80 children round in a big circle and teaching them the hokey cokey. Because language was a barrier, all right. But the thing was that eventually they agreed where these taps would go. And here we are in the church at the end of it, summarizing the whole thing in the flip chart. And the guy in the suit and collar and tie and the beaming African sun as he stood out there, he's the secretary, and he was keeping all the notes. And at the end of this, Reuben, the representative, got up and explained to this community, which was largely a Catholic community, explained to it why they were doing this, because they were impelled by the love of Jesus. Tearfund's distinctiveness is not just providing services, but bringing the good news of the gospel as well. And we were very impressed by the way they sorted that out. And can I just say that this scheme involved piping water for 20 kilometers. and the woman were going to do that. If the men in Ireland think they have the life of Riley, they should go to Uganda, I'll tell you. Then another thing we saw in this scheme, they had a number of model homes where they brought people to see how things were done. And here is Margaret's model home. The first thing we noticed about it, there was paint on the doors because there wasn't much paint around. And as we approached it, her little plants were in little tubs and so on, and she showed great care. And you can see how neat and tidy it was around there. That's her water jar that she has taken the trouble to camouflage to a degree. And again, it's so neat and tidy. Her latrine, when you come out of her latrine, and I should say that her latrine had its own air freshener. Not many African latrines have air fresheners. But she had a whole conglomerate of leaves, lemon leaves and so on, giving off a very nice, pleasant aroma when you were in the latrine. And when you come out of the latrine, she had her own hand-washing device. And Grace here, I'm not sure if you can see it. Yes, you can. You see the water container that has, there's cord on it. And when Grace puts her right foot on that stick coming out, the water jar tilts out over to give you an opportunity to wash your hands. She's taken great care with this. And Reuben said, this is a model home which shows aspects of sanitation and other good practices like hand washing, proper latrine use, safe excreta disposal, drying racks, compost pit, and the proper maintenance of the water facilities. We bring people here to teach them. Such is the work of this project in the Make Life Flow campaign. It is a terrific project, and it has brought so much life-changing experience to so many people, both practically and in terms of the good news of the gospel. Why should we help? Why should we help? We don't have to look very far in the Bible to find God's attitude towards poverty and hunger. It is evident in the law and the prophets and the Psalms and Proverbs, as well as Jesus' teaching in the Gospels. God's attitude to poverty flows from his own generosity. And as we were reminded earlier in the service, he has created a world that is bountiful. Genesis 1:29 reminds us, I have given you all the seed-bearing plants throughout the earth and all the fruit trees for your food. Poverty was not God's order for creation. It is a consequence of the fall. Today's unequal distribution and consumption of resources is the result of human sin, selfishness, and corruption, both at a personal and national level. That is why God put measures in place in the early books of the law to restrain that selfishness and encourage passionate, caring lives. Leviticus 19:9 says this, when you harvest your crops, do not harvest the grain along the edges of your fields and do not pick up what the harvesters drop. Leave it for the poor among you. Deuteronomy 15 says this, there should be no poor among you. God's attitude towards poverty is zero tolerance. If there is a poor man among you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted towards your brother. There will always be some among you who are poor. That is why I'm commanding you to share your resources with the poor. Our Lord himself, in his opening manifesto, as it were, in Luke 4, when speaking in the synagogue in Nazareth, said this, that he'd come to preach good news to the poor. Proclaim freedom for the prisoners, recovery of sight to the blind, and release to the oppressed. And we know his attitude to poverty, clearly stated in Matthew 25. Whatever you did to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. Yes, God has richly blessed us materially. And there's poverty that we have to deal with. But you know, the reason that Christ came is that we're all spiritually poor. We all, whether we're black or white, whether we have 20 taps or no taps within 10 miles, have to say with the hymn writer, nothing in my hand I bring, simply to thy cross I cling. Our poverty of spirit, often referred to as thirst in the New Testament, is something that Jesus Christ himself had to come to earth to deal with. And we see him talking about it on several occasions. At the Feast of the Tabernacles, on the final day of the feast, he stood up and said, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. That means if any man is browned off, fed up, cheesed off, dissatisfied, feeling weight of sin in his heart, let him come unto me and drink. Jesus is the source, the only source of the means of dealing with our spiritual thirst. And in that story that Alistair read to us, that dramatic story of the woman at the well, we see clearly Jesus so concerned about this woman that he went through bandit country. Make no mistake about it, when he went through Samaria, he was going through bandit country. And he broke all the social conventions of the day. A Jew speaking to a Samaritan, a man speaking to a woman in broad daylight. Why? Because he knew that her need of what he had to offer was so great that the social conventions of the day didn't matter. And what did he offer her? He offered her living water. She, of course, thought that meant fresh water from the bottom of the well. So she said, give me some of this. And he then said to her, but the water I give you, you can thirst from the water from the pool, from the well. But the water that I give you, you will never thirst again. Then, of course, he pointed to her sin, because her sin needed to be dealt with before she could have this water of life. So he pointed to her weakness, her sin, which in her case happened to be a moral one, and she had lived with a number of men. So having pointed to that and shown her need for cleansing from that, he offered her the water of life. And the great thing in that story is that that woman accepted Jesus' offer, and she became a changed person. That sinful woman at Sychar's well became a soul winner. And she brought others to Jesus. Jesus stayed there a few days and he taught them more. And isn't that the great truth of the gospel? The Make Life Flow campaign is important at one level for those who have no water. But it's also very important at another level for all of us. Because the most important thing that we need on this Harvest Sunday is the water of life that Jesus freely offers to us in the gospel. Just as I finish, I want to ask, how can we help in the situation that we find ourselves? You can continue to pray for the work of Tear Fund. That's vitally important. There's an excellent website, tearfund.org. Tear Times, I don't know if many people take Tear Times or not, but it's another way of keeping up to date with news. You can give directly as a taxpayer. Some of you are doing that. And that little leaflet, there are all these details. You can also campaign and write to Gordon Brown. And the Connected Church program, and I haven't mentioned this to Alistair, maybe he knows about it, but any church that gives over a donation of £500 can dedicate it to a particular project on the Connected Church website and get more details of that project. And it just so happens that the Kigezi Water and Sanitation Project is one of the things that you can donate to if you so desire. And but you can help in these various ways. And you also, I know, next Sunday are having a Tear Fund lunch. You can come and support the Tear Fund lunch. But say 450 of you all appear and there's only food for 300. Can I just say this? Don't yearn about the lack of provision made for you. Just go home and thank God that there's something in your freezer. Because the vast majority of the people that I met in Africa hardly knew where their next bite was coming from. So I'm sure there'll be enough. But I just want to issue that health warning. Because, again, we take so much for granted, and I'm absolutely no different from you. So on this Harvest Thanksgiving Day, let's thank God for all his provision for us. And let's also thank him that he has given us enough to help to provide for our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world. Let's pray.